Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
All right, you're very welcome back. All our GAA on News Talk is, of course, with Bord Gáis Energy, proud electricity partner to the GAA. You can follow all the under 21 hurling championship action at the hashtag hurling to the core. Now, earlier today, we had Paul Galvin in studio to give us his thoughts on how you go about dismantling the Dublin machine, professionalism in the game, and, of course, Gucci's testimonial dinner. But we're starting by flagging up a fundraiser for Paul's local GAA club that's happening next week. Paul, how you doing?
Good, Jor. How are you?
I'm very well. We're going to talk about the GAA season. Before we do, there's a matter very close to your heart. There's a fundraiser happening in Kerry for two clubs, which is really one club, or one town, one parish.
Yeah, my home club is Lixnaw Hurling and Fionnuaig Football. Big parish. There's actually two other clubs as well on the other side of the parish. But do you know what? We're like the guys at home. I haven't played at home in 2 years, but the guys are in the county hurling final replay on Sunday, this Sunday. And they're currently training in Tralee. You know, the local hurling pitch is closed. It was reseeded, but it also doesn't have floodlights this time of year. You know, the guys can't train. So, yeah, I just wanted to do something for both the football and the hurling side of the club. So we're having a show in Tralee on Friday the 20th of October in the Brandon Hotel. Duns are supporting me on it, and I'm showing my latest collection. And I think Padraig Harrington is showing his collection, and Savita and Lennon Courtney, some of the Duns brands and some local designers are involved as well. So a lot of work in it, but I mean, you know, we're hoping to get a lot of local support, community support, and wider Kerry support as well, because it's something I would like to do for other clubs as well, because I want to try and raise the level of the economic level, we'll say, in Kerry across the clubs, because I think if we can do that, you can raise the economy in terms of Kerry GAA. And there is a new economy in the GAA. I think you know everyone will accept that, I think. So this is just something I wanted to do to give something back at home and to try and raise the standards, the level of facilities, the resources, so that you can raise the level of preparation for club players, so that you might, by kind of proxy, raise the level of Kerry GAA, you know?
Yeah, for sure. We'll tweet out a link to where you can get tickets as well. £20 on the night, and obviously clearly for a very good cause.
£20 on the night. Tickets are available online at iregister.ie, and yeah, the money's going to the clubs. Half of it is going to Lixnaw and half to Fionnuaig, and we'll hopefully the half that goes to Lixnaw will be the beginning of a fundraiser to eventually
get the floodlights
up. Yeah.
When you were playing intercounty, did you have time in your head to think about this kind of stuff and the difficulties that the clubs were going through?
Thought about it, but not for long. You know, didn't dwell on it.
Yeah,
didn't dwell on it. But it was
which is
always
fair enough at the time, right? It's kind of like, because it's a wider conversation too about fixtures and championship structures and all that kind of stuff. And it's only really when you get a chance to stick your head up and look around and go, "Hang on a second, the hurlers don't have floodlights here. What's the crack?"
Yeah, I certainly have a different kind of appreciation for it since I retired. You know. And listen, any intercounty fellow will tell you the same. I think it's a bit of a selfish existence. It has to be. I think you have to be cold about it, and you have to be kind of, you know, it has to be tunnel vision. And of course, I always felt, look, you do the stuff on the field, you try and win trophies for your club, and that's given back. That was my kind of, that was the currency for me, you know. Now the currency is different. I'm older. I'm away from home, from Lixnaw Fionnuaig, and I want to try and raise the level, the standards of the resources and the facility, so that the young fellas might have better prep.
Because sometimes we think as well, like, we're amazed when mid-season a player is made available for whatever reason, generally because they won player of the month, or there's a launch and we're like, geez, these championship structures are terrible, you haven't played in 8 or 9 weeks. And they're like, don't really care that much because my job is to win the next game and not really get involved in this and not give any hostages to fortune.
Yeah, look, you'll probably get the same spiel there from players. You know, they'll say, look, you know, I suppose it's not ideal and it would be great if, but, you know, don't get bogged down in it. I found it a drag as a player at intercounty level. I found the 9, 10, 12 weeks. There were some years it was 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, it was just my physiology, my body. I would start maybe to come down a little bit physically if I was training for that kind of a block. It was never ideal for me, but every guy is kind of different. But I did find that gap between league and championship, I found that tricky.
And even the gap sometimes in Munster between your first round Munster match, if you're straight through to the semi and the final, it could be 7 or 8 weeks sometimes.
Absolutely, look. And I think it makes managers' jobs harder. It makes strength and conditioning coaches' jobs harder, because this is a very fine detail. Everything is measured. And, you know, you got to try and keep guys on a certain track, and it's easy to get that wrong. A lot of teams get it wrong, and it's tricky. It takes real scientific know-how and education to keep a team. Dublin, our example this year, I think Dublin really measured what they were about and were keeping a very close eye on their load and management and all that, kind of their output.
Because at the start of the season, obviously, word broke that they were having their holiday after Christmas, which was a big change for them, and certain players were being given time to go travelling, even if it was just 3 or 4 weeks as opposed to a couple of months. And it really looked like they managed that much better than a team that you would expect who is going for three in a row would automatically know to do, you know, don't change what we've done every year. You know, we're going to be a bit superstitious about this kind of stuff, but they weren't.
No, listen, you know, it was real probably. Listen, there was a bit of risk attached, but I think the game is at such a level now that it was a really calculated risk in terms of they knew the numbers.
Mm.
They were monitoring the numbers, they were monitoring load, they were managing load. So I think while it would have looked risky maybe from the outside who wouldn't be as maybe educated in terms of the data analysis, I think they knew what they were doing. I think the numbers, they were being guided by numbers. And, you know, it was funny, the All-Ireland final, I looked at it maybe three times since on TV, and it was a numbers game. The Dublin do the numbers very well. I thought Mayo lost their shape a little bit, whereas Dublin had more control by attacking with 7 or 8 players, defending with 7 or 8 players, whereas Mayo were maybe attacking with 12 players, defending with 3 players. You know, so I think Dublin was, it was certainly, they took a risk, but it was a calculated one, I think.
We'll come back to the Dublin side of it in a while, because you wrote a great column in the Sunday Times about that, and about that numbers game, and specifically about how Mayo are really the architects of their own downfall. That, you know, fans looking at the game say the free taker feels the weight of the ball in his hands with the chance potentially to win the game and misses it, they blame him. But you were making the case that Killian O'Connor was tracking back. One of his jobs was to track back and run and run and run. Dean Rock didn't have the same responsibility.
Yeah, it didn't. It certainly looked that way to me. Like he, Killian O'Connor found himself on his own end line a few times in that game. I don't think there was any danger that Dean Rock was ever going to find himself tracking a runner on his own end line in his own small square, in his defensive small square. That happened to Killian O'Connor a lot. He did a lot of tracking, and it looked to me like Dean Rock had a certain responsibility to defend and track, but maybe to the 45, certainly not beyond that. And he worked quite hard within a certain kind of an order. But yeah, I thought O'Connor putting in the kind of running that is going to take it out of your legs towards the end of the game, you know.
Yeah, so one is a function of the other. It's not that he choked, or that he, you know, because it's a free that he can kick.
He's not a choker.
Exactly.
He's done it on too many times, on too many occasions. I think he has got that mentality.
And so the analysis is wrong, that is, like, it comes down to him. It's actually, he's knackered, and we should be giving him the opportunity to score by not asking him to do the job with the defenders.
Yeah, it was funny. I thought the narrative after the game, everyone was disappointed with him for Mayo, and he was poor and he should have been taken off and he was this and he was that. But he kicked 3 big points. And he kicked 1 big point just, I mean, not long before he missed the free. Like, he kicked a big point late on in the game, or from the middle of the field, or from the 45 around a central position. And, like, so, I mean, you kick 3 points from playing an All-Ireland final, that takes doing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And there was this other sense that Mayo didn't have the game plan as evolved as Dublin's. Now, I mean, maybe nobody has the game plan as evolved as Dublin's was. That semi-final against Tyrone, in some ways, was football in perfection, because it was over from the get-go. They didn't stop. They were relentless, really, the whole way through. And I'd never really seen a team be as programmed as they were in terms of taking up positions on the field. There was a bit more chaos in the All-Ireland final, but they were still very programmed.
Yeah, I thought the Tyrone thing was a really masterful in terms of what they did. Like the sweeper system has been sweepers, and people were talking about sweepers and sweepers and sweepers, and the kind of narrative was that the sweeper situation is a problem in the game, and the managers implementing the sweeper system is a problem in the game. Whereas I think we facilitated the sweeper by playing conventionally a full forward, allowing a sweeper to sweep the full forward.
Yeah.
It looked to me like Dublin took the full forward line out of there and said, leave him on his own, which really gave them, Tyrone, different problems. By, it looked like they overloaded the half forward line and really ignored the full forward line when they were kind of in transition and Colm Cavanagh was standing around on his own, and that really looked to me like it dismantled Tyrone's whole game plan. I thought that was brilliant, to be honest.
Can everybody copy that, and if ever they come up against sweepers again, or do you need footballers of the talent and the conditioning and the self-confidence?
I was surprised it took so long for people to cop that the issue wasn't the sweeper, but actually the position of how you play your full forward or your full forward line.
Yeah.
Get them out of there, and then what does the sweeper do? And so, I mean, I think teams will start to do that. I think that's probably the end of the sweeper for a while, the sweeper system for a while, you know. And it's up to, you know what I mean, it's up to new thinkers now to try and find another avenue of approach, I think.
Yeah, the basketball element of this is something that was remarked on a lot. And I guess it was because the way, particularly, like you would have seen at various stages in the Tyrone game, the Dublin midfielders would be down either in the left corner together, and they'd be like literally at the corner flag at one side, and then you'd look up 20 minutes later and they could both be on the right-hand side. It was like they just knew exactly what they had to do, stretch the pitch. And it almost felt like there was somebody playing point guard and doing all those things that you would expect from a basketball team. How much of that is, do you think, just down to good thinking and good quality debate and analysis in the winter, and the lads who are from Dublin are planning what they're going to do to this? How does that happen?
Well, I think, first of all, it starts with coaching and ideas. Coaching on the field, implementing the ideas through coaching, and then a bit of discussion and debate and kind of tweaking things a little bit. But I mean, I'm a believer in ideas. I think football is an ideas game. Coaching is an ideas game. You know, the basketball element, I don't doubt that Jason Sherlock has a big part to play with his background in the sport. And he's probably implementing ideas that he might have had from basketball to try and move people around, change positions and try and disrupt these systems in the GAA, you know. So I mean, it starts with probably trying things on the training field, I'm guessing, and then talking about them. And
so Dublin is now the new problem for everybody to solve. It's not that new, obviously, because they've won so many All-Irelands over the last 6-7 years. What is the solution to the Dublin problem? How do teams have to, what are the ideas that they need to be countenancing at the moment to come up?
I don't know. Look, you'd have to be given a time and plenty of video, like studying them on video. And I think it's a numbers game. I always think football's a numbers game. You know, yeah. I think you got to play around with the lines, you know, and positions. These conventional positions, I don't believe in that much anymore, to be honest with you. So, look, you know, people are talking about the Dublin problem, and it's not a problem for me. I think it's brilliant. I think it's great. And I think teams got to come up now and try and outthink them and outdo them, right? The point I would make is the critical thinkers, the Jim McGuinnesses and these guys, do you know what I mean? Like, I think they're, you have him negotiating transfer or, you know, contracts in China with a soccer team, whereas I feel, should he not be negotiating with Croke Park for a deal to remain as manager at Donegal or whatever, you know what I mean?
I
think it's those guys you need to try and tackle the Dublins and the best thinkers, you know what I mean? You need good thinkers in the game. I think that's where it begins in terms of tackling, you know, this Dublin machine.
Yeah, that kind of takes us nicely onto the issue of professionalism. Like, should we have professional managers? Is that where you think this game is going?
Well, look, I've taught that for a long time, you know what I mean? I've treated it as a professional game myself as a player. Like, I don't believe in this word amateurism and amateur. Like, you know, okay, you have to respect the ethos of the game, but I made the point in the past, what about the founding fathers of the GAA, you know what I mean? Did they ever, when they founded the association, did they ever believe that, you know, the association would be turning over 100 million euro in revenue or dealing with Sky? So, like, I don't know how relevant that point is anymore about amateurism. I prepared as professionally as I could. And I think, you know, if we went around behaving like or preparing like amateurs, I'm not sure we'd have the spectacle of the game that we have if the Dubs didn't prepare as professionally as they do. So look, I think at the very least, you know, managers have to be in a position anymore where they're talking with Croke Park about their situations and not county boards running around trying to find a few bob here and there to pay them, you know?
Yeah, and like obviously everybody understands that as soon as the managers start to get paid, you would expect the GPA to go, well, we're the ones who are actually out in the field. Everybody comes to see us. And so that is the next step. Like, Do you really think that's going to happen? Do you see that happening? Or
I don't know, Ger. I don't know. Listen, it's easy here, you know. And that's just my belief.
Yeah.
I just feel the game is professional. I just think there's a huge disconnect between this kind of amateur, we'll say, ethos and what the reality of the game, you know.
So. And so the big knock on the notion of professionalism is that it'll kill the clubs because no one will want to go and volunteer anymore. That somehow, I never really understood that disconnect. Like, it never made any sense to me that people who volunteer because they like the sport, they get enjoyment out of it. It's a social event, it's a social occasion, and they feel part of their community. Not because no one's getting paid who plays the sport.
Yeah, it's funny, man. I never understood that myself, in that, we'll say, could it not be a kind of a boost to the club game whereby young guys could say to themselves, well, I have an opportunity here now through my club to, you know, become a professional sportsman or a semi-pro or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So, like, I kind of felt it could help the club game somehow, but I don't know. Listen, I don't know. It's easy talk, like I say. But, I mean, all I know is that we'll take Lixnaw Hurling Club are down at home. They can't train on their pitch at the moment. They're training inside in Tralee with other teams because they don't have floodlights. So, I mean, the club game, I can't say... I don't know if it's going to hurt the club game any more than where the club game is at already. Do you know that kind of way?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not exactly like it's in this rude health, and you can't really blame that on...
No. I mean, they say amateurism, they say professionalism is unsustainable. To me, amateurism looks completely unsustainable.
I want to talk to you about Colm Cooper then. Obviously, this has been a big story. He was in during the week speaking with Joe. I haven't really been on air for the last couple of weeks. I haven't talked to anybody about it. I don't really understand what the big deal is, because if you don't want to go, don't go, right? Like, I understand that there is this weird sense that somehow he is transgressing a morality which is not written down anywhere, which is not codified properly, which we're supposed to all be able to look inside our souls and understand somehow what it means. And I don't really like that notion of a secret code.
Yeah, I mean, look, I felt reading, and I know Patrick Duffy made some statements yesterday on it, and I'm not sure, listen, he's done a great job, and the GAA is in great health, and nobody can fault how he has managed in his role and his position, but like, I'm not sure if he realises how his comments came off yesterday. I just thought they were quite mealy-mouthed and quite small to say that, you know, we can't have a situation where an individual profits from the GAA and you know, where clubs don't profit and an individual profits instead. Like, that doesn't seem right to me. Like, you know, at the end of the day, he's given some money to his club anyway, as it turns out. But, yeah, look, I don't know. It doesn't change anything for me. I'm going along. I support him fully. I don't see why he's been kind of criticised in the manner that he has been.
Yeah, it's kind of water off a duck's back for him. He seems happy enough with, didn't quite realise it was going to be such a big story, but he's not cancelling it.
No, well, listen, you see, you have to realise that this Gooch is a tough, he's a tough guy, like, you know, he's got a tough mentality, and,
yeah,
you know, he's smart as well, you know what I mean? So he's able to see the wood from the trees, he's able to deal with criticism, and he's able to constructively go, this is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
if this becomes a regular thing, like, it's actually, to me, it's tapping into a different pot of finance. Like, it's corporate Ireland in a way that I'm not really sure that the accountants firm who is buying a table at the Intercontinental was actually going to put any money into their clubs, or is taking a pot of money that they have for GAA and going, oh, I'm not going to give to clubs this year, I'm going to give to this guy so they want to go to dinner.
That
doesn't make
point.
Any sense to me.
I think that was the point Patrick Duffy was making.
It was a point that generally had done it had swept through the GAA culture. Like, you know,
doesn't add up for me now, because I don't know of that being a practice anyway. But look, at the same time, you got to consider, I was one of the people who was out in Century to visit Gooch when his leg was in two halves almost, you know what I mean? So, like, there's a side to it too, where I think people from the outside can comment and can say what they like, but they don't really understand either.
Yeah.
What it's like to go through a career and put what you put into your career, and then to be told at the end of it, you can't kind of do this kind of a thing. doesn't seem right to me.
Your generation are the first generation really that went through that level of ultra professionalism and gym work and giving up jobs or not working or staying extra long in college to play intercounty, and it's across hurling and football, and it's the one that's kind of coming out now and starting to say, hang on a second, and be articulate for the amount of time that it takes to become an intercounty player to play at the standard that is so good that everybody wants to go and see. Like, there's been a boom in the people going to the games in the last 15 years, and there's a boom in the quality of the fare that people are watching, despite the negativity of the pundits on TV. And it's going to be interesting to see, like, as you guys all finish going, I want a bit more. Why shouldn't I get a bit more? Look at all the money that's being generated here. My taste should be a bit bigger than this. And I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way.
I mean, like, anybody outside of the GA would probably look at it and go, well, that seems quite fair. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the crux of it.
That's the crux of it. Do you know what I mean? So, I don't know. The noise, there's a lot of noise around it. I don't care. As a teammate, it doesn't change anything for me. I'm going to support them, and I'm looking forward to going. And I've no issue with it. What kind of rankled with me a little bit was the statements that said, you know, individuals profit. The GA, you know what I mean, have been profiteering really for a while. And to say now, to turn around and say no one else can do it, I think that's unfair.
That's the bit that doesn't make sense to you.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. What do you think of the coverage of the games at the minute? I'm always interested to get your take. You've gone and jumped the fence from being a player to a pundit now, writing in the Sunday Times. And obviously you have to look at the game a little bit differently. Or do you? I don't know. Maybe you actually haven't. Maybe you've decided that wasn't going to be something you did. Would you have watched every All-Ireland final 3 or 4 times on TV if you weren't writing about it, if you didn't have to kind of?
No, probably not. But the more, I'm just getting more interested in the game than I was maybe, like, if you had asked me maybe 12 months ago what my feelings were about being involved in the game going forward, I would have said I'm not sure, not really that keen. But now I'm probably more, it's in my head more in terms of being involved somehow. So there.
Coaching.
I don't really know, you know what I mean, in a backroom team maybe. Analysis I find really interesting. I just for no other reason other than it's in my head. I think about what I thought about that final and what happened in that final and why that happened to Mayo.
Yeah.
And for me it boiled down to the sending off and but not for the reasons that people might have said, you know, Donal Vaughan getting sent off, Johnny Small getting sent off. Like, if you look at that play, you had along the Mayo half forward line, you have Lee Keegan in the number 12 position making a run forward. You have Donal Vaughan in the number 11 position standing with his back to goal. And you have Cullen Boyle in the number 10 position standing with his back to goal. Now, like, I couldn't figure out how 3 Mayo defenders were in half forward positions, 2 of them facing their own goal. You know what I mean? Cullen Boyle got buried by John Small, and I kind of thought, do you know, he deserved it for being up there in the first place, getting in the way kind of thing. So, like, you know, you had John Small doing his job, Keane O'Sullivan was next in to cover him, I think Johnny Cooper was in and Philly McMahon was in.
Yeah.
All in kind of doing close to what they were supposed to be doing primarily. Whereas I couldn't figure out how number 5, the nominal number 3, which is Donal Vaughan, and the number 7 are all up in half-forward positions. And that was how Mayo attacked all day, and I just don't... There was a lack of shape and a lack of order to it that I think cost them.
Yeah, it's like Dublin really absorbed the lessons from the Donegal defeat in 2012. Was it 13? Whenever that blitzkrieg was, and decided that they were going to just make sure that everybody would always be in the best position for them. That doesn't mean that players don't move. Like, you frequently see some of their forwards coming back and making defensive runs, but not the free taker.
No, and they do it, and it's about control. I think they play with control at all times. It might be someone like James McCarthy might make a run late and get those points, but I mean, he'll do it at the other end as well, and he'll might stop a point down the other end. But I think they maintain control. I think the way Mayo played, you can't really control a game.
Can Dublin only do that because they've got some of the best footballers that we've seen, and they've got one of the best teams of all time? Is that only because they're that good that they can do that, or could other teams try?
There's a lot of IQ in the team. I think they have an intelligent team, and you look at them off the field. There's a lot of financial brains, and then a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of business guys. And I just think there's a lot of IQ in that team at the moment, and you need that. you need that because you need the coaching, of course, but then look, you need to be able to sort it out yourself as well at times, you know what I mean? And like Johnny Small, you know, hitting Colin Boyle, like, that was there in him, that was instinct, that was always in him. And like, he got a chance, he sniffed a guy with his back to him who was going to turn into him, and like, he didn't probably mean to hit him down the middle, but he knew he was set up for a good hit there, like, and that kind of thing, I think, is innate in a lot of them. They have a good feel for games, they have a right level of aggression, they can control it whatever way they feel they need to in a game, and I think they're well coached probably as well.
It's a ridiculous question, but how would your best team have done against this current Dublin team?
Well, I think our 0-4 team would have been a very interesting game, you know, because our 0-4 team, even though our 0-9 team was probably a better football team, but the Kerry 0-4 team was a steely team. You had the likes of Johnny Crowley, like, you know what I mean. I would like to see the full Dublin full back line try and mess around with Johnny Crowley.
Yeah,
I think William Kirby would have been a handful for a lot of the guys around the middle of the field. You know, Liam Hassett in his prime would have been a tough draw for them. So I think that Kerry 0-4 team, I think any of our teams now would.
We'd be close.
Oh, well, come on. We'd be winning.
You'd be confident,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'd be confident, of course I would.
Yeah, so in this debate, the debate of the greatest team of all time.
Well, if you wanted to ask me who'd win, I think we'd beat them.
Right.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I would say that.
The 0-4 team?
I would say the 0-4 team would, and I think the 0-9 team would.
Right, they were your two best teams.
I think the 0-9 team was probably our best team, but the 0-4 team was highly coached, very, very good, very high IQ, right level of aggression, mechanical when it needed to be, but could play off the cuff as well. So yeah. Like, I thought there was a great balance to that 0-4 team. Then you had Mike Mack and Tom in their prime. So like, yeah.
So if you're listening to this debate about Dublin being the greatest team of all time, you're thinking, well, we would have beaten them. That's like, and ultimately, because there's a debate, it comes down to the number of All-Irelands you've won, but I don't really believe that. That's not how this works. Not for me. Who's the best team of all time?
Look, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer to that is. Like, I'd probably have to say the Kerry four in a row team, probably for me, you know.
Would you have beaten them?
I don't know. Like,
that's heresy.
Hard.
You can say it about the Dubs, you can't say it about Kerry.
No, I wouldn't. It's hard to compare, and it's even hard to compare now. Look, the Dubs would say they'd beat us, and sure, we'll say we'll beat them.
It's going to sustain us over the winter.
Just to be thick about it, you know. So,
just a couple of quick things. David Clifford, how quickly should he get into the senior team? What's the right thing for him as a person, and what's the right thing for Kerry and for us as football fans who want to actually just see him play?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad he's staying put, and the rest is up to Eamon really, in management, and how he progresses from here, and how he matures. He seems a mature guy, but it's really Eamon's call what happens next, and what that'll be, I don't know. But I'm glad that he's nailed his colours to the mast anyway. You know,
there's a lot of pressure on him now. Or is there not?
Yeah, maybe not. I don't think there is, from what I've seen of the guy in terms of how he speaks and that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that there is, but look, you have Eamon, you have Maurice Fitz. I think he'd be well handled. The new county chairman is also kind of is on top of the situation. So I think he'd be looked after, and I don't think it'll be a huge issue for him.
Are you guys as excited as we all are about him, or do you kind of want to try and dampen down that just to make it easier for him?
Look, I reserve judgment, really. I didn't get involved in any of it until really I saw the minor final this year, because I saw Derry and Dublin in the minor semi-final, and Derry were so good at the back.
Yeah.
They were really good defensively.
Yeah.
And I thought, Kerry are going to have their hands full here with Derry, and they looked really well coached, and I was impressed by them. So I thought, you know what, this is going to be the acid test for them now, because they're good at the back, they're good shape, and they're athletes, and you know, he just laid waste to them, and I thought, wow.
From the first minute.
But I'm not one to shout and roar about it anyway. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I just want to see the guy, you know, progress and be part of the Kerry story going forward. That's all I want. And I'm glad he's staying put from that point of view.
All right, good stuff. Just remind us again, if anybody wants tickets, iregister.ie.
iregister.ie. Joe Canning's a guest on the night, sorry. Joe's coming down. I've huge time for him, and we get on well, so he's our guest, and he's given me a jersey. Peter O'Mahony has given me a Munster jersey. John Egan has given me a Brentford jersey, which will be a collector's item.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Kerry boys are coming, so Yeah, listen, everyone's welcome. I'd like to do it for more clubs in Kerry, even more clubs outside of Kerry. I'd like to do it for Kerry GAA as well, possibly going forward. So, you know, we want to have a successful night for Lixnaff and Uig so we can do it again, and Duns are supporting me on it.
Friday the 20th of October in the Brandon Hotel in Tralee.
The Brandon Hotel in Tralee.
When you said there was a new economy in the GAA, what did you mean? That was kind of what you were talking about, the level of professionalism that there is out there.
I think there's new money in the GAA, you know. I think the brands that are the brands surrounding the GAA are flooding the game with money. I mean, I'll give you an example as an ex-player around the week of the All-Ireland final, you know. A lot of money to be made for ex-players.
Yeah.
Myself included. No, I didn't take up any because I was tired. Just tired of the noise and tired of the I kind of stayed back from it, but like the game is I think there's a flood of money in the game at the moment, and I feel like Dublin have a very good business model. Dublin are behaving like a brand, and they're leveraging their brand. So that's what I mean in terms of a new economy. I think brand behaviour is important now in terms of how you act and how you leverage the brand and how you try to kind of become more self-sufficient. And I think Dublin are driving that, and I think that's a good thing.
And while you do have to have tunnel vision when you're a player, this stuff kind of filters into your consciousness and you're looking around going, everybody else is making out here, but we're not. That bit.
In what sense?
Like the point you're making about the new money being there, the ex-players benefiting the week of these big games and the semi-finals, and it's gonna increase now with the Super 8s. It'll be more concentrated and it'll finish a little bit earlier, but the current players, a lot of them aren't making any money and some of them are making super money. So at some point, that all needs to be addressed and everyone needs to be honest about it, as opposed to just saying, well, we're all amateurs and that's it. Yeah. And that conversation's over.
Yeah, maybe. Look, I don't know how you can kind of manage that, but like I certainly, the week of the All-Ireland final, I thought of the players. I was offered a lot of money to do this, that and the other thing. And I thought, how am I being offered this money? And these guys, and of course, some of them will make some and some of them whatever. And that, look, it's not an argument. I'm going to carry out or carry on or but I just know that there is a new economy in the GAA. I think there's more money in the GAA than there ever was before. And from my point of view, I just want my club in Kerry to do well. And I want to see Kerry GAA probably be on the same playing field or as high a playing field as they can be from that point of view, you know, so that we can compete, because I think it counts.
Yeah, good stuff, Paul. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Ger.
Off the Ball on Newstalk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.